Jimmy Hoffa didn't just disappear, he was erased. On July 30, 1975, the most powerful labor union leader in American history stepped out of his house in Detroit to attend a meeting with two known mafia figures. He was never seen again. No witnesses, no body, no solid forensic trail. Just a nation stunned, a government embarrassed, and a legacy silenced by whispers from the underworld. For decades, the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa has been one of America's most tantalizing mysteries. Did the mob silence him to protect their grip on the unions? Did the FBI let it happen to bring down bigger targets? And what about Frank Sheeran, the mob hitman who, before his death, confessed on tape that he pulled the trigger? Even now, rumors swirl like cigarette smoke in a Teamsters bar. Was he buried beneath Giant Stadium, dissolved in a Detroit crematory, or hidden somewhere so mundane it's genius? This is not just a missing persons case. It's a story about power, betrayal, and how far organized crime will go to keep its secrets buried, sometimes in plain sight. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Man Who Wouldn't Stay Quiet, Detroit, July 30th, 1975. 2:45 p.m., the parking lot of the Machu's Red Fox restaurant in Bloomfield Township was quiet except for the occasional hum of traffic. Jimmy Hoffa stood outside his green Pontiac Grandville, arms folded, checking his watch. He was annoyed. The meeting was scheduled for 2 and what's. It was now 45 minutes late. The men he was expecting? Anthony Tony Jack Giacalone and Anthony Tony Pro Provenzano, two high-ranking mafia figures. But they were nowhere to be seen. The rise of Jimmy Hoffa. To understand why Jimmy Hoffa's disappearance shook the country to its core, you have to understand who he was. Born in 1913 in Indiana, Hoffa was the son of a coal miner and had been organizing labor by the age of 20. He rose through the ranks of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, the most powerful union in America, eventually becoming its president in 1957. Under Hoffa's leadership, the Teamsters ballooned to over 2 million members. Truck, drivers, warehouse workers, construction crews, all backed by Hoffa's iron will and shrewd negotiations. He secured better wages, pensions, and protections for the working class. But his empire didn't stop there. Behind closed doors, Hoffa was forging alliances with the mafia. The Teamsters' Central States Pension Fund became a slush pool for mob-backed investments. Hotels in Vegas, construction deals in Chicago, real estate in Florida, all funded through loans managed by Hoffa and his inner circle. It was a dangerous game, and Hoffa knew the risks. Federal pressure and prison time. In the early 1960s, Robert F. Kennedy, then U.S. Attorney General, made Hoffa his personal crusade. Kennedy formed the Get Hoffa Squad, launching numerous investigations and high-profile Senate hearings. Hoffa called it political persecution. But by 1967, it caught up with him. He was convicted of jury tampering and fraud and sentenced to 13 years in federal prison. But Hoffa was too proud and too powerful to stay in the shadows. Even behind bars, he maintained control of the union. It wasn't until 1971 that President Richard Nixon commuted his sentence. The catch? Hoffa was barred from participating in union activities until 1980. Hoffa never accepted that condition. He planned a comeback. And that's where his problems really began. A dangerous comeback. By 1975, Hoffa was ready to take back his throne from Frank Fitzsimmons, the man who'd replaced him. But the landscape had changed. The mafia liked Fitz. He was pliable, quiet, and not trying to clean house. Hoffa. He was unpredictable, vengeful, And worst of all, he had a memory. He threatened to expose the mob's control over union loans. He was telling friends, even reporters, that the Teamsters would no longer be a mafia puppet. According to FBI surveillance and informants, Hoffa was meeting with mob figures, demanding support for his return. He'd contacted Anthony Provenzano, Tony Pro, a Genovese capo and former ally-turned-enemy, asking for an endorsement. The conversation didn't go well. Hoffa once had Tony Pro beaten in prison. There was bad blood. Very bad blood. The last known movements. At 1:15 p.m. on July 30th, Hoffa left his Lake Orion home. He told his wife, Josephine, he was meeting Tony Jack, and Tony Pro at 2:00 p.m. at the Machus Red Fox restaurant. He was planning to settle old scores and finalize plans for his Teamsters' comeback. Witnesses later said they saw Hoffa standing in the parking lot around 2:30 p.m., pacing. By 3:30 p.m., he was gone. His unlocked car remained in the lot. Inside, a set of keys, a hairbrush, and no signs of struggle. There was no note, no surveillance footage, no forensics. He had simply vanished. The FBI investigation. The FBI swung into action quickly. Within days, they were running wiretaps, executing search warrants, and questioning dozens of suspects, especially in Detroit and New Jersey. They named suspects but never pressed charges. Anthony Provenzano claimed he was playing cards in New Jersey at the time of Hoffa's disappearance. Giacalone insisted he was getting a haircut. Neither alibi held up under scrutiny, but they were never proven false either. Cadillac-sized holes were dug under houses. Bodies of water were drained. Theories erupted. He was shot in a Detroit house and cremated immediately. He was buried beneath the old Giant Stadium in New Jersey. He was stuffed in a 55-gallon drum and shipped to Florida. But nothing ever stuck. A legacy stained by power and paranoia. The Teamsters distanced themselves from Hoffa after his disappearance. Frank Fitzsimmons continued to lead, while organized crime retained its grip on the union's massive pension fund. Jimmy Hoffa became legend, his name a byword for disappearance, betrayal, and the unspoken cost of power. But one man would later claim to know exactly what happened, a confession that would turn the cold case into a national obsession once again. Chapter 2. The Hitman's Confession. 3,500 words. 2003. A Quiet Home in Delaware. Frank the Irishman. Sheeran sat across from author Charles Brandt, his face pale, his voice gravel. He was dying of cancer, and he had a secret to get off his chest. "I killed Jimmy Hoffa," he said. "It was me. I drove him to the house, put two in the back of his head." Who was Frank Sheeran? Frank Sheeran wasn't your average mob thug. Standing 6'4", a former trucker turned union official, he'd fought in World War II and claimed to have committed over 24 hits for the mob. He was a close associate of Russell Bufalino, the Pennsylvania mob boss, and claimed to be Hoffa's friend for decades. His story would become the basis for the 2019 Martin Scorsese film, The Irishman. But in real life, it was far less cinematic and far more contested. Sheeran said that on July 30th, 1975, Russell Bufalino ordered him to pick up Hoffa. He did, along with two other mob associates, and drove Hoffa to a house in northwest Detroit. There, Sheeran claimed, he walked Hoffa inside, told him everything was fine, and shot him twice from behind. No struggle, no screams, just silence. The cleanup crew, Sheeran, said that after the killing, Hoffa's body was quickly removed by a cleanup crew who loaded it into a 55-gallon drum. Some say it was cremated. Others say it was crushed and buried. The house was later tested by forensic scientists working with 60 Minutes and found traces of blood in the hallway and foyer, but no definitive match. Still, Sheeran's confession caused a media firestorm. He had motive, access, and connections, and unlike others, he was there. He named locations, details, and timelines that the FBI had kept secret for decades. But even that wasn't enough for a conviction. Doubt, disputes, and DNA. Many experts have cast doubt on Sheeran's version of events. Motivations: he was dying, he had nothing to lose, but he may have wanted fame. Timeline gaps: his account contradicts Hoffa's known last sighting. Evidence: no physical proof has ever confirmed his role. Still, former FBI agents admit that Sheeran's story fits the theory they'd developed privately for years. And if it's not true, it's one of the most convincing lies ever told. Theories and conspiracies. Was Frank Sheeran telling the truth? To this day, the FBI officially classifies Hoffa's case as a disappearance. No body has ever been found. No one has ever been charged. But theories persist. The stadium theory. Hoffa was buried under the concrete slabs of the old Giants Stadium in New Jersey, poured days after his disappearance. The incinerator theory: he was taken to a Detroit funeral home, controlled by the mafia, and cremated the same day. The barrel theory: he was placed in a drum, shipped to New Jersey, and dumped in a landfill. The FBI complicity theory: some believe the government looked the other way to gain leverage against the mafia, trading one man's life for systemic takedowns. The Frank Sheeran theory: the Irishman did it. No ceremony, no burial. Just a silent kill for an old friend turned liability. But none of these theories have ever led to a body, a trial, or a tombstone. Legacy: myth made in blood, Jimmy Hoffa remains both a martyr and a villain. A champion of the working class who made deals with devils. A man who tried to claw back power from people who never forgive. His disappearance wasn't just a hit, it was a message. One that said, no matter how big you are, the mob is bigger. One that said, you don't retire from that life, you vanish from it. And somewhere, beneath concrete or ash, Hoffa is still waiting to be found.